You're listening to SpectraCast, the show where I get behind the scenes on diversity and inclusion. I'll be talking to a number of people who have taken steps towards greater inclusion of others, and also with those who have benefited from being included in the workplace. Whilst my bias might be towards recruiting and retaining neurodiverse people, I'll also explore practical approaches to be more inclusive overall. Hi, I'm your host Chris Turner, and I've made it my mission to help employers to embrace and reap the rewards of being more inclusive of neurodiversity. In doing so, I hope to do my little part in ensuring more neurodiverse people get the same opportunities and choices as everyone else when it comes to work and employment. So, if you're curious and want to learn from those who are doing it, and you favour action over inaction, then stick around. Welcome back to the podcast, guys. Great to have you on board today. In today's episode, I'm going to sit down with James Marnie from JP Morgan Chase. Now, James has been doing some great work over at JP Morgan, not just realizing absolutely real business value from their Autism at Work hiring program, but also making a true difference in the lives of people, not just their staff, that they've employed, but their families and the communities around them as well. And a great conversation with James today. So sit back, have a listen, and I really do hope you enjoy. Thanks.
So James, how about we start with a little introduction?
Sure.
Who's James Mahoney and what does he do himself?
Yeah, James Mahoney works at JP Morgan Chase for the past 6.5 years. I never envisioned that I would be in the field of heading up autism at work and employee accessibility. I've got probably 25 years of business leadership and technology leadership roles, including how I got started with autism. I was the chief quality officer for our home lending technology division 4 years ago when we got in front of a company that wanted to place people on the autism spectrum into technology roles. And that's where my introduction began. And then after a successful pilot, it converted into a full-time program. And they asked if I wanted to lead it. And I thought, this is perfect. I get to use my leadership. I get to influence, use creativity, help solve a problem we've never solved before, help do something we've never done, look in new places for talent. And by the way, our premise is one of talent, not charity. And so it was just this perfect storm of timing and really good leadership above me who saw this as a sweet spot for me.
That sounds awesome. And I do like the fact that you highlighted that it's a play for talent, not charity. And that's exactly what I stand on.
Sure.
We've got to lead with... It's the individual and their capabilities first beyond anything else. So
otherwise, absolutely.
I think we'll devalue them is my concern.
We'll devalue them and we'll end up putting people into positions that don't fit their skill set very well. And everyone will get frustrated, the person on the spectrum, the manager, the company. And so that's great care that we have to take up front to get a bullseye on the first job. And then make sure we nurture the progression into other jobs, if appropriate over time, in advancement.
Yeah, and you know what? Shock horror! It sounds very similar to what you do for anybody.
I always say that. I was like, this is what we do already. It's not new to us to think in these terms.
It's not at all. And I think that's I've almost seen. The light come on in people's head when they that realization dawns on them. Oh, this is kind of just doing normal stuff for normal people.
Yeah. So. And even Chris, we talk about, well, how do you make sure that the manager is doing the right things for people on the spectrum, and simple things like, well, like tell them what the meeting is going to be about. So have an agenda. At the end, recap what the decisions were and tell everyone who has to do what and by when. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, that would work for everyone. I'm like, yeah, it does. It's universal design and it's not for autism that it's successful. It's really good habit. So we learn these lessons as well.
Yeah, that's right. And it's often very obvious once you've started doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what were some of the kind of, it doesn't sound like there maybe would have been too many, but what were the barriers that, or the challenges or concerns that you faced at JP Morgan starting out? You said you did a pilot initially, so I can imagine.
We did. Yeah, we did a pilot. And actually, I think the way we did it was pretty smart. For JP Morgan Chase, we've got 250,000 employees. Everything has controls and risk mitigators built around it. Like, it's hard to get progress sometimes out of an idea. And my CIO and myself and our HR business partners were the only ones in on the initial discussion. And we kept it small. We didn't pull in a larger HR group. We didn't pull in compliance. We just said, let's try 4 people in software testing. Had we tried to start big and get this committee of agreement, I think it may have died in the idea phase. So we avoided that barrier. But we did face barriers down the road. Mostly, I will say, in terms of the way people think about autism. And I'll give you an example. Often when I'm speaking with senior leaders, very senior leaders of the company, about the concept of autism at work, we told people about our business, the business value we were bringing in. We had instances where the people on the autism spectrum with no experience were 90 and 140% higher productivity than their typical peers who had 5, 10, 15 years experience. And you know, that's good. Business leaders gravitate to that. But the big mistake they make and continue to make is they think autism is one thing, one type of autism. It's Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man, or it's very myopic. And I have to politely but firmly say to them, you already have people who are on the autism spectrum in your large organization who either aren't diagnosed or don't tell you. And so then it flips the switch a little bit. The other barrier that I think we'll still be chasing for a while, and it's not a barrier, it's just a misunderstanding, is I think still people, managers, line managers in particular, think autism is some intellectual deficiency. And slower speech,
yes,
thinks that the person is slower minded. And so they tend to give, on day one of the employee assignment, they give very simple work and very little volume work. And it backfires because the people get through quickly and it's way too simple for them. I think those are some of the things, the barriers that we've faced, we continue to face. And then, yeah, I think those are the big ones. I think other than that, there really haven't been any barriers. People often ask me, well, have you had any behavioral issues or anything like that? Sure. We've had a small handful of the 100 plus people that we've hired. We've had a small handful. And that's no different than if I sampled a typical group of employees at 100 plus. You know, you're going to have a small sample of, we had a code of conduct, or we had this, or we had this. Nothing extreme at all.
So not abnormal relative to the general population?
No, as expected. You know, you have some things that just need adjustment or doesn't work out.
And I suspect for many of those people, it's very common. It's the same sorts of reasons around misunderstandings or external pressures that were in a lack of communication.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you did mention something, and it was one of the things that, and I've probably been misquoting it, but I had heard on the grapevine that there'd been some analysis done, and it was around relative productivity. And I know it's only one dimension of overall performance, but it's one that gets people's attention, I think, as you say. That had been done, some analysis work that had been done at JP Morgan around performance after, and I think it might have been measured at sort of a 6 to 12 to 18 month sort of time frames, and how that relative throughput was shifting some of your population.
Yeah, so 2 examples. The very first group of people we hired were doing software testing. They had no experience. They took 6 months to get, fully ramped up. But by the 6 month mark and on, they continue to perform about 48% faster than their peers, their typical peers, who had 5, 10, 15 years experience. And by the way, that's an apples to apples comparison, right? We measured the same week every month when everyone on the team was doing the same exact work. I thought that was important to specify. From there, we went to a different role. We hired 3 more people, and the results there were more remarkable. A, it was a quicker ramp-up time. The expectation was if we hired somebody off the street, 3 months, they're on their own. All 3 people that we hired on the autism spectrum were good at 2 months. At their third month, they were 90 to 140% higher productivity and greater quality than their peers. It was a very repetitive work. It's basically work is pushed at you and you're provisioning systems based on a set of very clear rules. So it was a good combination of content and a job. But think about that. If you're at the 90 to 140% higher productivity range, conceivably for every person you hire, you could get 2 people's worth of work out of them, right? So that's what I loved about the first 2 examinations that we did was it underscored our premise. The premise is talent, right? Premise is business value. Ads. And, so that's the examination we did. Now, those are metrically provable. But then you step back and you say, what other information do we have that tells us this is successful? And, of course, we focus on the business side with the metrics. But what do we have on the community side, on the people with autism? There, it's less quantifiable. But I can tell you, numerous people who for the first time moved away from mom and dad, live on their own 40 miles away from mom and dad, probably 10 plus people went and got their driver's license for the first time. And these are people in their 30s, right? So that sense of independence and confidence. Some of them, their personal care, right? Their grooming, their clothing, like really a sharp turn to the improvement. And I think that's based on their observation of people around them. One kid, I'll say he's a kid, never had a girlfriend. All of a sudden he's got a girlfriend, So you're seeing some independence, confidence, interactive things that, again, we can't put a number on. But I say, okay, well, clearly we're impacting people one at a time here. And that's a good thing.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that I probably had never really appreciated was the flow on as well from that. And for me, it was the one that stands out was the family, the parents who, what it did for their state of mind and their confidence and comfort levels and the excitement that they had of being able to see their son go to work happy, not just going to work, but being happy about it as well. And from not having work and facing a prospect of possibly not being able to find work.
Yeah.
So it touches a lot of other people as well, which is, again, you can't really measure that. How do you value it? But
yeah, but we've certainly had. So a couple of people are relatives of people that already work at the bank, and so I have these informal conversations with them, and I've heard repeatedly like, oh, the family has noticed such a difference in him outside of work. And by the way, I often say him because so many of the people we've hired are male because of that disproportionate skewing of the diagnosis rate.
You started out as a pilot and then you ramped up into a full-fledged program. That started in what? Was it in IT areas? So you said software testing initially.
It did. So our pilot began in technology, IT, and we continued in that area probably for almost a year and a half. About the year and a half mark is when we broke out into we're gonna do this full scale. We have to look in new places for talent. The lowest unemployment rate in the U.S. in decades. And, unavailable people to match jobs coming down the road. We expect 2 million open IT jobs with not enough people to fill them by 2020. So this is why we kind of proceeded along. Today, though, when we went to full program, we said, well, we're not going to just do IT because there are other, you know, we're a firm that has operations type business roles. So today we're at 70% technology, 30% business. And I see those as, so it went from 100-0 to 70-30. I see those as coming closer together, but probably technology will likely, this is my gut telling me, will likely always be ahead. I say that based on, you know, visiting universities and hearing about the percentage of the self-declared or self-disclosed students on the spectrum, and they're lopsided. They're all in engineering and technology majors, or many of them are. That said, you know, visual arts is another space, so we probably see some tapering off.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the pieces of feedback that I often hear is, well, there's all these IT roles, but I'm not an IT person, and we're not all, you know, sort of technology-based people.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that is actually being skewed by, I guess, a number of IT firms or IT functions taking on this opportunity because they could see the direct correlation between the work that they had, the demand for talent that they're facing into, and the shortage of people, and then saying, well, here's an untapped pool. So kind of one plus one is going to equal four if I get this right.
Yeah.
And yes, there's going to be a lot of people who go, well, I don't want to do that, but that's what we're seeing. That's where we're seeing the, I guess, the ice being cracked, but it's, you know, moving into other areas, I think is what's going to create a lot more opportunity for other people.
Yeah. And that, you know, that comes back to my earlier point that it's so important to get that right fit in the first role. And so if somebody doesn't want to do IT, we're not going to put that in the space. We've been successful in particular with the software testing people that we hire. They've 24% of them in just over 3 years have moved up into software engineering, so more technical roles. That outpaces the general population by 3 to 1, right? So 8% of our general population makes that jump, and we've got 24% in a very short amount of time. That's a good indicator of pathway for us, but it's not exclusive, to your point. Not everyone will fit into that pathway. And that's why we have things like compliance officers on the business side, bank teller, know your customer analysts, fraud investigators, following the paper trail, following data forensics.
Bank teller. And am I right in thinking this is someone sitting in a branch liaising directly with customers?
It is, and we've actually got two. We've got a bank teller, and we've got a personal banker. So a personal banker is for our high net worth clients. And you're right, it is surprising, but not unheard of, right? Where you've got somebody who's, yeah.
It's just for me. I'm kind of chuckling here because it's really topical. I had a conversation last week with somebody, and they were curious about, you know, what I do and who I do it for and the like. And when I talked it through, it's like, oh, well, but we're a very client focused consulting type practice, and it won't work for us. And I'm not just talking about just people on the spectrum here as well. I'm talking about all sorts. I'm like, okay, all right. Well, so, yeah. And at that point, I go, well, you can't push, right? If you're not interested, then it's not something you can force someone down that path. So, no worries. That's fine. But it got me thinking, and I'd heard it a couple of times, and I put out a video on LinkedIn around it, and just asking the question, you know, does this is what I'm hearing, does it sound right? And because it didn't feel right to me, and I've known a few people, I've met some interesting people who are really, really good at doing job interviews and fantastic, you know, acting and doing all sorts of things where it's very interpersonal related. And it just, I thought it was just an interesting, and I think it's great that you've just mentioned that you've actually got people doing well in exactly those kinds of roles.
Yeah. I mean, so we've also, they're doing well. And then the other thing I think is people think, you know, oh, if you hire somebody on the autism spectrum, you're going to put them in the mailroom, and they're going to be pushing a cart or working in the cafeteria. And we've got a managing director, so one level above me, who's on the autism spectrum. We didn't hire this person, but she disclosed. And then we've got an executive director, someone my level.
Yeah.
And then we've got several vice presidents that were hired through the program. So you do see, and I think that's holding up a mirror to the spectrum. You would expect to see that breadth of the spectrum and different communication styles, different abilities. Some people managers, some not, some client facing, some not. And that's, you know, I think that's been a lesson for us. And it's certainly, it creates an aha moment, you know, for anybody we're telling the story to. They're like, oh, wow, a bank teller. You know, it's, that one always gets a, you know, they want to talk about that one, just like you did now. Really? You know, they say a bank teller. Yeah, bank teller. So that's good news.
And I think it's good. It is one to talk about, because I think it's how do we dispel and debunk commonly held myths and assumptions?
Yeah.
And I think the danger is that people go, they lead with the diagnosis and they say, okay, and then make presumptions around what that then means. So like you say, mail room, pushing carts, whatever it might be, as opposed to, well, you know, we've got an executive director, vice presidents, blah, blah, you know, all these people who, and there's a range, and there's going to be people who, like many others, no aspirations for that, don't have the fundamental capability to do it. Doesn't mean they're not great at the things that they do.
No different than our typical employees. That's my response to that. That's not new to us. We have people today who are not inspired to be an executive director of this company. We have people today who are perfectly happy in the same job for 20 years. Let them be if they're great workers.
Man, it's another topic altogether, I think. But yeah, I've seen that before as well. Oh, they've been doing that for too long. We should move them on. But if they're happy and they're doing a great job, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do have that, Chris, I have that conversation a lot, because we're very much that company that, oh, we have to move them into the next thing. And that tests how good they are. Like, you have to change that thing. You have to change two ways of thinking at JP Morgan Chase and a lot of companies. One is perpetual motion in your career does not mean a lot, does not mean the same thing for everyone. And we have to respect when someone wants static. Two is we overvalue to a fault the gregarious extrovert, the extrovert, the networker, the person who's always working the channels, especially in senior leadership. We really place a premium value on that when it comes down to opportunity reward. And so you have to find a way to get value out of your introverts as well. And with autism, introversion is often co-present.
Yes. Yes. It's fair. That's fair. But so we've talked about the things that go really well and what works. What have been some of the things or the challenges that you have had? Like, you know, I know we said there wasn't really much on the behavioral side of things, but, and where things don't quite fit. And how does that present and how do you navigate around it?
So if someone's not fitting, so first of all, we've had fairly good success. We have one model where we bring people in as a consultant and then convert them to employment when they're ready. We do that through a vendor, a local vendor, three of our US locations. When we started, that conversion rate to employment was about 50%, 50. Today it's 80%+. So we're getting better at upfront identification. The manifestation of, you know, if there's a problem is usually, you know, the person's not retaining, the person's, you know, distracted and not staying with the job, instead being on the phone or dilly-dallying. And so I think, you know, those are some of the things we see. The behavioral things have been so incidental and infrequent. I don't know that there's any commonality across them. To speak to, you know, to me, it was just like, oh, it's, you know, something that we responded to like we would a typical person. And then the other problems I mentioned are on the typical side, on management side, where they're not yet always there in terms of giving, you know, real meaty work to somebody that we bring in.
I guess that's just the practice piece there as well, isn't it? But
yeah.
How would you recommend if someone's looking at a start on this, and I know there's a number of people I've spoken to, I think that the idea of a large scale sort of approach, or maybe they just don't have in the internal scale to support something major, it might be one or two people. What would be your advice to them about getting started?
Yeah, I give this advice a lot. My start is start small, not tiny, right? So one, two people is way too small, unless you're running a bakery or a car wash and you have a spot for a person. If you're a company, sizable company, start with three, four, or five people. Don't create this committee of bureaucracy that's going to try to get it perfect before you take the first step and prove the concept. Start with a few people like we did. Keep an eye on business results. How are we going to measure whether or not the people are performing and the people are going to, you know, be rewarded, ultimately be retained? And then you'll be pleasantly surprised at the business results. You'll start to tell them, and then it's off to the races, because there's this contagion that builds. And quite honestly, the contagion usually starts with people hearing of it and they're touched emotionally. And they're like, oh, this is beautiful. We should do this. I think those are the wrong motivators. Their intrinsic motivation is good, but letting your heart push this is second. The first step should be let your mind, what can this do for the business and the individual? How do those join exponentially and create that synergy? And that would be my advice. And then just, you know, I think attitudinally, if you're starting this, you have to make it okay to make mistakes. You have to say out loud, we are going to make mistakes. We're going to learn from them. That's okay. We don't have the recipe. And you go from there, and then communicate. And it really does. It's like wildfire in terms of the people who want to get involved. A lot of parents in our organization want to be buddies and mentors. And then the village kind of feeds itself at that point.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned partners as well. You work with some local partners. What's the nature of those relationships? How does that work?
So when we started, we knew enough about autism to know where the dilemma was in terms of traditional interviewing techniques won't elicit what a person's good at. We won't be able to, you know, say you're going to be great in this role. So we wanted somebody with that expertise, and we were lucky because we had a neighbor in the state of Delaware who was not only a technology company, but they were in the business of autism at work for many, many years. And so they got us started in three of our US locations. Then when we go to India, of course, we have to rely on a nonprofit or NGO there with a different set of dynamics. Mm-hmm. With a government that just started recognizing autism, with an educational system that can still discriminate based on behavior, with a taboo mindset often at the family level with autism, with a lack of diagnostic therapeutic family services. And so each of these relationships, as we go to, you know, we've launched in Brazil and soon Argentina. Each of those requires a different set of things, right? HR law comes into play, et cetera. So that's where we rely on agencies maybe to get us started in a region, but we're also trying to supplement more and more through direct hiring and direct recruitment, especially through universities where we already have established partnerships.
It's interesting. And I can see that you'd have a real melting pot of cultural, legal, societal, differences as you move around from place to place. It's make it really interesting. With the lessons and what you're learning from both on the hiring and the management side of things, are you seeing any changes sort of leach out into the broader business?
What do you mean by that?
So, you know, we talked about the simple things around providing an agenda for a meeting and been having clear explicit instructions, or how you may alter the recruitment process to better showcase or allow someone to showcase their what they can do versus what they can tell you they can do. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any changes starting to occur in other parts for the norm, you know, the neurotypical or your standard recruitment or management practices?
Yeah. Some are pretty subtle. But like, I think when people hear the success of the story, the business success we've had, the growth of the program, the promotions within the program, things like that, people say more boldly, you know, how much we value cognitive diversity. You know, we shouldn't be hiring people in our own image. We want different ways of thinking. It's always been a pursuit of ours, a vision, but now our very senior leaders, our global CIO, our CEO, can point back to specific things in this program that exemplify exactly what that is. And then I think the other thing, this is, you know, these are all kind of attitudinal as well, but the other thing is among our employees, our non-autism, our typical employees, there's so much, this story, when we show a video, when we publish a story, when we're in the news, you know, employees just really talk about this and comment on it in positive ways. Again, we're a big company, so not every employee is a happy employee. You know, we get the amount of disgruntled employees, but I believe that not just this program, but this program being one of many good ones, really drives